Hi, friends. Welcome back. I know that generally over break, folks have some mixed experiences. So I know for some of us, like, we go home and it's really like encouraging and renewing. And for others, it's like maybe not those things. So my prayer for everybody is that you're able to start the semester finding a little bit of rest and a little bit of revitalization. You're able to refocus a little bit starting this semester. It's also New Year's resolution time of year. Any like resolution people? Small list of things. Nobody sets resolutions here? Okay, cool. Well, to be completely honest with you, I'm like a notoriously bad resolutions person. Because the way I decided to approach it in the past, anyway, has been to like take a comprehensive list of anything that I've ever wanted to do, and I disregard the feasibility and like the actual probability of any of it happening, and I say, these are the things I'm going to do. So a list for me in the past has looked like lose 20 pounds, write a book, learn guitar, learn a new language, audition for Cirque du Soleil in Vegas. Like, so I get really excited about it, you know, for like a few hours. I'm like, I'm going to do all these things. It's going to be the best year ever. And that lasts, and I like make progress toward all of my goals. I do some stretching to prepare, and it lasts me for exactly 3 to 4 days before it comes crashing down, and I'm like, I'm the worst person ever because I can't keep to any of my goals. So this year, I just decided to scrap that whole strategy. It's not working for me, obviously. I'm going to try something else. And there's a movement that's kind of happening the last few years where some folks have chosen one word. And they're like, okay, I'm going to pick one thing, and it's going to be one word, and I want to cultivate that one thing, more of that in my life. And so I think maybe that's a better choice for me as far as like what I can actually do. So my word that I've chosen for 2016 is joy. Right? Melanie's got it. She can give some of that to me later. I, if you know me well, can be a person that takes myself a little bit too seriously. Everything's kind of like a big serious deal all the time, and I kind of forget to just have fun and enjoy this life that we're given on this planet. And so there are little adjustments that I'm making, like try to dance more and stress out about things less. And so there's lots of avenues, but I'm also kind of picking one thing and kind of one decision that I'm making to try to move myself in the direction of this one thing, hoping that I'm setting myself up for a little bit more success than years past. So this is kind of just public accountability. So let's see in a few months if there's more joy coming out of my life. You all good for that? Awesome, thanks. So I want to talk to you a little bit more about that one thing, but I'm going to save it for later. So hold on to that idea and we'll come back to it. Tonight, we are going to visit three different stories of three different people who had interactions with Jesus, and we're going to see if their stories can speak into our lives tonight. So let me pray for us, and then we'll get started. God, I just thank you that you have brought everybody back here tonight. And I thank you for where you've been present in our lives, where we've recognized that and where we haven't. We just thank you. We thank you that you are good and that you are with us. And tonight we just open our minds and our hearts, and we just open ourselves to what you have for us. And we want to have an experience with you that brings more life into us. So we prepare ourselves for what you have for us tonight. We thank you that you're here, in Jesus' name, amen. We're gonna start in Luke 19. You can turn there in your Bibles if you'd like. It'll also be on the screens. Jesus entered Jericho, starting in the first verse. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see Jesus, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. Short people problems. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. Okay, let's pause for a second. We'll come back to the story. So we have this person named Zacchaeus, and it says that he's a chief tax collector. Now, sometimes it's hard for us to understand culturally kind of what that meant to the community, because we think IRS, like, yeah, we don't really like them. But this was actually much worse than that. Tax collectors had a horrible reputation because they were extortionists. They basically stole money from people. So they would charge more for each family than the government needed, and then they would keep the extra profits. So if you're trying to think about what this would be like, there's actually a scam that happens sometimes with students when they study abroad, when they travel internationally, where somehow these folks find out that someone's traveling, and they'll call your grandma, and they'll tell them that you're in trouble and that you need $3,000 immediately wired to some account or something, and they steal money from your grandma. Like, that's how bad these people are. That's what Zacchaeus is like. And if you think about, like, someone being out of place when it comes to Jesus, this was a person. People would have been like, we do not like you, you're corrupt, and you steal from people, some people who don't have anything. And so you're definitely not welcome around Jesus. So it says that he climbed the tree because of height problems, but I think it was probably also because he knew that he wasn't going to be welcome in the crowd and that he was an outcast and did not belong. So if you think about another comparison, it would be kind of like Bernie Sanders showing up at an Ashbrook event, right? And everybody would be like, what are you doing here? Wrong place. I mean, so there's all these people following Jesus, and then there's this tax collector, and it's that kind of situation. Like, you don't belong with us. So Zacchaeus comes with his curiosity, right? He's curious. He's like, I think that there's something interesting about this Jesus, and so I want to get close to him. So he's curious, but he's largely unknown. So our first person and our first account is a person that's largely unknown by the community and by Jesus. Let's pick up his story in verse 5. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up to him and said, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. I just wonder, like, if Zacchaeus felt a little silly in the tree, you know, because he's kind of hiding, and then Jesus looks up and he's like, hey, Zacchaeus, why don't you come on down? He had to be like, I'm not graceful getting out of a tree, guaranteed. So something that sometimes we can miss here is how big of a deal it was that Jesus wanted to go to Zacchaeus' home and fellowship with him. Because it's more than a dinner party. Again, culturally, what it was a demonstration of acceptance. Jesus was saying, like, this might be a person that you've, you know, labeled as, like, evil or outside God's purposes, but I am saying he's welcome with me, and I'm going to come and share fellowship with him and get to know him a little bit better. I also love that he uses his name, right? Like, I don't know how he figured that out, but he calls him by name. So you can see a little bit of the controversy here in verse 7. All the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. Interesting, right? So there's something for Zacchaeus about being in the presence of Jesus that says, I need to right some wrongs here in the community. So this is, I'm going to make some adjustments. Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham, or a part of God's people. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. Okay, we're going to hit pause on that story. Story number 2, Luke 8. I'm going to start in verse 42. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. Okay, so he'd been teaching and performing miracles and drawn a crowd in its very, like, tight quarters. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak. Okay, so here we have an unnamed woman, and what we know about her is that she's been ill for 12 years. And again, I don't know about you, but I get the flu, and it's like I'm dying. Like, my roommate will come home, and I'll be like, go on without me. I'm not going to make it out of this. Like, I can't handle being sick. And so it's hard for me to comprehend what it would be like to be physically unwell for 12 years. So there's that. On top of that, it is believed by scholars that this probably was a problem that was menstrual in nature, which made her unclean at all times, because the law was basically that makes you unclean. And so what that means is that she would have been shunned entirely. Her family wouldn't have been even able to, like, touch her or spend time around her, and it carried a lot of shame. Childbirth also in the time culturally was kind of a sign of worth for women, and so that would have been just another layer of shame, and she would have been a very isolated woman. It also would have been a great risk for her to enter a crowd. Again, she had to stay away from people at risk for touching folks and making them unclean. And so for her to, like, sneak in a crowd with Jesus to try to touch him would have been really controversial and risky, and could have resulted in great punishment for her, even being stoned. So she's really kind of risking her life because she's that desperate. It does say that she tried to find help and healing other places and hasn't found any. So I think it was really desperation that drew her to take desperate acts to get in front of Jesus. So she came to him out of a place of need, but her culture and probably herself would have declared her unworthy. Those around her and probably herself would have said, I am unworthy to be around Jesus. That's probably why she didn't come right up and ask him for help. She said, if I can just be sneaky and touch him, I'll find healing, and he'll never know about it. So what happens is that she touches his cloak, and immediately the bleeding stopped. After 12 years, immediately she is healed. Jesus says, who touched me? When they all denied it, Peter said, Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you. So I just love Peter's character and all of these things, but I love this because he's in a crowd and Jesus was like, who touched me? And Peter's like, everybody. That's an awkward thing to say. Like, everybody is around you. But of course he's missing something, also typical of Peter. So Jesus says, someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me. So somehow Jesus felt power leave him to heal her. Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. Again, she's probably very scared of punishment. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, Daughter, immediate reinstatement to family and belonging. Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. Pause. Account number 3. We're in Matthew 14, starting in verse 22. Okay, again, there's a crowd following Jesus. He had just fed a multitude with not a lot of food. He had miraculously multiplied food. So there's a lot of people. Picking up in verse 22, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side of the lake while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went on the mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. Again, sometimes if you're familiar with the story, you can be like, oh, yeah. But I wonder what Jesus was like when he's like, yeah, I guess they're out there. I'm just going to, like, take off toward the middle. There's, like, a storm and waves, and he's just going for it. So Of course, again, I really get the disciples' perspective here. When they saw him walking on top of the water, they were terrified, rightfully so. "It's a ghost," they say, and they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." What he's actually saying there when he says, "it is I," is he's saying, "I am," which is actually the name that God gave for himself in the Old Testament. So it's kind of like an extra reassurance to say, "Take courage, I am God, no need to be afraid." Peter says, "Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water." Again, Peter, man, I don't know, always follow his like train of thought. He's like, "I'm not sure if it's you. If it is, I want to do what you're doing, and then I'll know. If not, I might die. It's worth it." Jesus says, "Come." Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Okay, so let's pause here and talk a little bit about our main character in this one, which is Peter. And this time we have somebody on the inside. He's in the inner circle. In fact, he's in the inner three followers of Jesus. They've spent some time together. He's gotten some personal teaching and conversations. He is pretty sure that Jesus is the one he's been waiting for, the Messiah. But I refer to Peter in this passage as the hopeful doubter. You know, he's not sure. We see it twice. In the boat, he's like, "If it's you." And then when he's on the water, he starts to doubt. And so he's hopeful that not only is it Jesus, but that Jesus is God. But I think he's also still unsure. So here we have someone close to Jesus who still has a little bit of doubt. He's willing, but he's unsure. So I think that he is probably still trying to figure out who Jesus is. But I also think he's unsure about what it means for him if Jesus is God. Because I've thought about, like, when he's on the water and he starts to freak out and he starts to sink, what is it that he's doubting there? Jesus is still standing there on the water. I think he's probably doubting himself. And what does it mean for me that Jesus is God? Like, does that mean that I can also walk on water? So he has these uncertainties and these doubts. Let's see how Jesus responds. Verse 31. Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You have little faith," he said. "Why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. It's interesting to me that when Jesus and Peter are out on the water, that Jesus doesn't calm the storm. We know that he can do that because he does that at another time. He says, "Peace, be still." Everything stops. Wind stops, wave stops. Everything gets calm. But instead, he kind of meets Peter in that place and has kind of a personal rescue with him. And then when they get back into the boat, everything calms down. Those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." So we have three different stories with three people that kind of have some different labels, either that they've put on themselves or that they put the society and the people around them have put on them, of being unknown, unworthy, and unsure. They're coming from three different places. They're also coming for three different reasons. So Zacchaeus is mostly seems to be just curious. I think there's something about Jesus that might be valuable to me enough where, like, I want to make adjustments in my life if he wants to be around me. The woman seems to come out of a place of need. Like, she is just in a place where she needs help, and she thinks that Jesus might be the answer that she needs, and so she's coming. And then Peter seems to be coming out of a place of needing some affirmation and clarity about who is Jesus and what's that mean for me. So lots of different places and lots of different needs. One thing that's the same in all three accounts is that all three people put themselves in the path of Jesus. Zacchaeus, like, looked ahead and said, "Jesus and his people are going to be down there," and he goes to the tree that's in the path of that. The woman is a little bit more ninja-like. She's like, "I'm just going to sneak in here," but she gets where she can be with Jesus. And Peter really risks something to say, "I think that you are worth me risking my life for, really, so I'm going to risk getting out of a boat in the middle of a storm because I want to be in your path. They're also all steps of faith. And if you've been around me for any length of time, you'll know that for me, faith has never been like a warm, fuzzy, and comforting word or presence in my life. It actually, to me, feels a little bit more like an experience I had years ago when I went bungee jumping. That's what faith feels like to me. So I was with my friends, and peer pressure is a real thing. Sometimes it's positive. I got back and my dad was like, well, now I know if your friends jumped off a bridge, what you would do. Yes, that's true. But we were driving and we were in South Africa doing missions and service, and we passed a sign that was Guinness Book of World Records, largest bungee jump in the world. I mean, what are you gonna do? You can't like drive past that and pretend like you didn't see it. You have to like stop and do it. And then what they do actually is they run your credit card first and they tell you what's non-refundable. And it's like hundreds of dollars. So then I'm like, well, now I'm jumping off a bridge because they're not going to give me my money back. So the thing that they don't tell you, though, is the bridge, the floor of it is made out of that like see-through crate, like Cedar Point type flooring, which is cruel and unusual because as soon as you psych yourself up, you like take a step and you see how far down it is. And so my friends were like kind of fine, I don't know how, and I was like crawling out to the center. They're like, are you okay? I'm like, I'll be there, I'll just meet you there. And then they like let you pick a song, like you could, and they're all like really heavy songs, not like Sarah McLachlan is not welcome on the bridge. It is like get psyched up songs that you need for this experience. And so, but my friend is a terrible person, and right before me, like the song he picked to jump off the bridge to was, let the bodies hit the floor. Not kidding. Sidebar, all of that to say, for me, faith is when you feel like you might pass out or throw up at the same time. And I think that that is part of our relationship with God. I am not sure if our relationship with God is supposed to feel tame, safe, or comfortable. And if it does feel manageable and maybe boring, then I think we're probably missing out on an invitation that Jesus has for us. You know, I think he has that kind of faith experiences and adventure waiting for us in life with him. And that's something that we see demonstrated with Peter. Specifically. So I think one of the other really helpful things to notice that's the same in all three stories is Jesus' response to them. His response to all three people is summed up in a Greek word called sozo. You actually see it in all three verses. For the Son of Man came to seek and sozo the lost, or save the lost. Daughter, your faith has made you sozo. It has made you whole, or it has made you well. Go in peace. And he was afraid, beginning to sink, and this is where Peter cried out, Lord, sozo, Lord, save me. And we see Jesus reach out and save him. So this word is fascinating to me. It's most of the time translated as save, but it has a broader meaning than that, because you'll see it also means in the story with the woman, it's the idea of healing. It also means being restored to wholeness. So this is what Jesus meets us with when we come to him, every time. So for those who maybe feel unknown, or maybe like you don't entirely belong with God or within Christian community, Jesus says, I see you, I know your name, and I accept you and I welcome you and I want to spend time with you. For those who either you yourself or maybe other people have put unworthy on you, Jesus says you are restored and you are made whole. And for those who feel unsure about maybe who Jesus is or what does that mean for my life, he reaches out and he rescues us and he challenges us, right? To have that kind of crazy faith. So no matter where you're coming from or no matter your reason for coming, if you put yourself in Jesus' path, you're going to be met with sozo. You're going to be met with his saving, restoring, healing, making whole presence. And that's something we deeply believe here at The Well. Our motto is encounter, experience, respond. And we believe that we can have encounters with the living God that really change us. And in really powerful ways, in that he always meets us with this good salvation, in this good restoration. So my question tonight is, what does it look like for you to put yourself in Jesus' path? So I talked at the very beginning about how I have my word, joy, and there's really one thing that I'm doing to pursue that. It's inspired by a book called 1,000 Gifts by Anne Lamott. And so she really tells a compelling story about how basically starting a list of 1,000 things that she's grateful for changed her perspective on life. And for her, it's what positioned her before Jesus to experience more joy and more full life. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to also try this because it sounds like she could be onto something here. Now, she's like very poetic and like thoughtful, so her list sounds like the gleam of summer light on butterfly wings. And my gratitude list sounds like coffee, you know, like, so it's a little bit less glamorous, but it is cultivating something in me. It is making me pay attention to God's grace that shows up for me in the moments of my day in little and big ways. And I think it might be a key for me of joy. So that's the one thing, the one step that I'm trying to take to get closer to Jesus and to put myself in his path. So my question for you guys tonight is, what is one thing that, and what does that look like for you? And maybe there's a word that goes along with it. As I was thinking, maybe it's questions, and maybe you're saying, like, I'm gonna like voice the questions that I have about God and faith and life. I'm gonna find somebody that I can talk to about those things. Maybe your one word is honesty, and it's like, okay, I'm going to get real about some things, or I'm going to even be honest with God and start a prayer journal where I don't edit myself, and I just am real. Maybe your one word is calling, and you think maybe God has some adventure for you that you could step into or you haven't yet. So it's really, I want to create some space to explore that. We love to like pray with each other here at The Well. I think that's a great way to encounter and interact with God. So we'll have some folks up front and in the back. If you want to have someone pray with you, if you're like, yeah, I think maybe I know what this looks like for me, or I have a word that, and I want prayer for that. Or if you don't, and you're like, I have no idea what this looks like for me. I don't even know how I want to interact with Jesus, and I don't even know what it means, also fine, also happy to pray for you. So let me pray over all of us, and then we'll worship together.